Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Sammy Nisbet, and you're listening to Late in Life Lesbian. It's been a whirlwind of a week getting back into podcasting mode and just getting through the daily grind in general. I have to say, I was pretty overwhelmed with the emails that I received and reading through the reviews of the old podcast on iTunes. I really had no idea that people actually liked the show. My face burned with embarrassment for a couple of reasons. One is I don't know how to handle compliments too well. And the second reason is that I felt that I had unintentionally ghosted an audience that I didn't even know I had. I told my wife that I logged back into the accounts and read the reviews and comments, and that I couldn't believe the kind words that were written about the podcast. And she said, "Well, why are you surprised? It was a good show. It's too bad you let it go." I know I should have felt good about the compliment, but in the back of my mind, I felt shame. I felt shame for abandoning a project that I cared deeply about, and shame for repeating an old pattern of mine called self-sabotage. And I've been doing that ever since I was in college, probably before then, but one particular incident sticks out in my mind. I was an English major in college, and I wrote a paper for my English Seminar 2 class on William Faulkner. You want to talk about doom and gloom? The whole seminar was on William Faulkner alone for one whole semester. Anyway, I didn't think it was a great paper, but when we met for class, my professor called me aside at the end and asked that I prepare another paper for next week's class and wanted to discuss it. I don't even know how to describe the emotions that I felt. I was certainly flattered, but I was really more embarrassed than anything. I couldn't understand why my professor singled out my paper. It wasn't anything special, and in the back of my mind, it was just a fluke that he even read it. I certainly didn't think it was worthy of serving as an exemplar for other papers. But of course, I agreed to write the paper and then proceeded to party for the whole week. And I left the material unread and the paper untouched until the day it was due. I allowed my friends to convince me to go to the bar on the day that the paper was due, which was probably my idea. I then got shit-faced. I went home 2 hours before class, typed the paper on my typewriter, remember those, and I showed up to class, three sheets to the wind. My professor was furious. He pulled me aside at the end of class and told me that he would never ask me to facilitate another discussion again. I may have aged quite a bit since then, but my self-sabotaging tendencies haven't changed much at all. It seems that whenever I'm told I'm good at something, I manage to orchestrate the situation to prove myself and everyone else otherwise. You'd think that after 49 years of walking this earth, I'd be able to change, considering that I can articulate clearly what the problem is, but no, nothing's changed. My point is that I may have done the same thing with my podcast, as well as countless other things over the years. But with that being said, I want to read an email from someone that was in my Gmail account from this past April. It reads, "Hi, I'm 46 years old and been married for 12 years. For years I've battled with my sexuality. I no longer want my husband. How do I tell my children?" The truth of the matter is, I don't know how to tell your children, and maybe you've even told them by now. My kids were young when I told them, and I'm not really sure it was the right way. As a matter of fact, it was probably the wrong way to tell them. They were young. My oldest was about 8, and my youngest was about 6 or 7. And their father and I went through a very bad period when I came out to him. He stayed in our house in the basement for a year. And we lied to the kids and told them he was staying in the basement because of my health issues and that I needed my room to myself. And in that year, we tried to maintain some semblance of normalcy, but it was far from that. He drank a lot. I drank a lot. We fought a lot behind closed doors, so the kids wouldn't suspect that anything was wrong. And we avoided the whole issue of divorce, of him moving out and of us telling the kids, that we just couldn't be together, or why we couldn't be together. There was a point one night where he went out and he drank too much, and he came home. He had smashed up his car, and then he started to smash things in the basement. And I don't know how this happened, but remarkably, the kids didn't hear it. But I was frightened that night. Avoiding the inevitable made us both unbearable. So I decided at that moment that I couldn't go on any longer living the way we were. I stayed up that night. I wrote an email to my attorney, and I wrote a note to my parents explaining that I didn't feel safe in the house with him and that I'd be telling him to leave the next day. And the next day, I found him an apartment close to our house, and I co-signed for a lease. He was unemployed at the time. I insisted to him that we each have our own conversations separately with the kids, and I told him essentially what I was going to say to them. I still don't know why I chose to do it this way, but I took my boys out to dinner that night to a restaurant that they loved because it had a ton of video games for kids. When we sat down at the table, I let him play a few games for a while. I had a drink to muster up the courage to tell them that their dad was moving out. When they came back to the table, as their dinner arrived, I told them. I told them that I hadn't been telling them the truth about why Daddy was staying in the basement. I told them that sometimes moms and dads just realize they would be better parents to their kids if they didn't live in the same house anymore. I gave them the old classic line that we both loved them more than anything in the world, and that this was the best way that we could be better parents to them, and that it had nothing to do with them. My heart broke over and over, and I watched the tears roll down their cheeks. My heart breaks now just talking about it. My oldest son said, "What am I going to tell my friends?" And my little one, my youngest, just cried and cried. I tried to explain to them that their dad would just be around the block, and now they'd have two homes to go to where people loved them more than life, and they'd be happier. My older son has always been an old soul, and he put his arm around his brother, probably for the first and only time in his life, and he told him that things would be better this way. Then he kind of dug in his pockets for some quarters and asked his little brother if he wanted to play a video game. Of course, that was an offer my youngest couldn't refuse, so off they went to play some kind of shooting game in the foyer of the restaurant. I ordered another drink, and I cried my eyes out, and I just watched them from a distance. When they returned to the table, my oldest son said, "Don't worry, Mommy. It's going to be okay." And my youngest said, "Yeah. Now we get to have two Wii consoles in two different houses. This is going to be so cool." That was 10 years ago. I'm pretty sure that the boys wouldn't exactly describe the last 10 years as cool. But we got through it. And the only path I had, or that we had, to moving on and healing was to stop avoiding the situation and confront it head on. I'm not suggesting you take any approach remotely similar to what I did. Honestly, it was painful for a long time, and it felt like one of the biggest crises of my life. I don't want you to sit here and think that your problems and your pain will magically disappear the moment you tell your kids or your husband or your family or your friends. As a matter of fact, I didn't tell my kids about my sexuality that day. I'll save that for another podcast. But the process is frightening, and it's hard. My advice to you is to get as much support as you can and talk things through with a therapist if you have one. I had one. I've had many. It doesn't make it easier, but at least you have a safe, supportive place to work through the emotions, I guess. I've also been really fortunate to have supportive friends. But I was stagnated by fear. And the longer I avoided moving forward, the worse my fears became. And I had envisioned all types of horrible outcomes before I actually did it. And believe it or not, though, as difficult as the process was, the fear and the avoidance and the range of scenarios that were building up in my mind were actually much worse than what really happened. I'm going to be cliche here. And if I can quote Scout Finch, quoting FDR, like, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Let me be crystal clear, though. You have to start your process only when it's right for you. I don't know what anyone's situation is. There may be other mitigating factors that prevent you from moving forward. You have to make sure that you're physically and emotionally safe and capable of moving ahead. I can't repeat this enough. Find support. Find support. I want to add one last thing here. In listening to the old podcasts and in thinking about what I've just talked about, I realize that I make a lot of references to drinking. I don't drink anymore at all. I stopped for medical reasons, but in the couple of years since I've stopped, I've come to realize that I probably drank too much, most likely to avoid and to numb the pain. And as I reflect back on a lot of the drama that I had in my life, I can definitely say that my drinking exacerbated all of those situations. I'm far from perfect now, and I still make a lot of mistakes. But I can say with certainty that adding alcohol to the mix did not help me at all. I'm also not trying to be preachy. I mean, I would probably enjoy knocking one or two back on occasion if I could, especially with Donald Trump being the president and all. But in a weird way, I'm glad that I can't drink anymore. That about wraps it up for today. You can email me at lateinlifelesbian@gmail.com or visit the website at lateinlifelesbian.org, where you will find an occasional blog. I am Sammy Nisbet, and thank you for listening to Late in Life Lesbian.